G'day listeners, you are listening to the Natives Rouseabout podcast. I'm your host Trent and I'm joined by my co-host Ben today. How are you going, Ben?
Good, thanks mate. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Great to have you here with me. So I've roped you in tonight. We're going to talk about the history of Empire Day. We've got a podcast coming up, and in the beginning I was going to give a brief overview of the history of Empire Day, especially in Australia. But as I started doing the research, I was like, oh, this is a bit too much for just a little tacked on bit at the start of a podcast. So we're going to do something a little bit different today. It's probably going to be a bit of a shorter runtime, but we're just going to go through the history of Empire Day. So do you know anything about the topic out of the gate, Ben?
Mate, very little at all. And okay. I'm excited to discuss today's topic because I feel like many other people, it's a very lesser known topic. Very ignorant on all things Empire Day.
This is perfect. You can be like the stand-in for the listener and you can ask me any questions that they would have. So I'll start from the very beginning. Empire Day kicked off in Canada in 1898. The real spark that got it going was a lady by the name of Clementina Trenholm. She was a Canadian-born British loyalist and an activist. She published a bunch of pamphlets, stuff about the flag, patriotic British loyalist stuff. And interestingly, she was a big opponent of women's suffrage, publishing pamphlets and doing activism around that. And she was a founding member of a kind of interesting organization called the Imperial Order, Daughters of the Empire, which was like a charity women's organization. I think something sort of like the CWA in Australia, which ended up having 50,000 members after Clementina's time around World War II. And it's still in operation today. So that's just a little bit of interesting trivia I found when I was looking into this. But Clementina, she felt that in Canada, they weren't being loyal to the empire. They weren't patriotic Britishers. So she began just by lobbying her local education department and her local politicians. And she had this idea. She wanted to do this Empire Day thing. And she got in a few people's ears and convinced them, and they agreed. So they started, and it started as a program in schools where just on this one day a year, they would have these sort of lessons and celebrations. It was part of the curriculum. Started quite small as a regional thing in Ontario in Canada, but it pretty quickly developed into a national event in Canada. Obviously, with the history of Canada, the American War for Independence, a lot of the British loyalists moved up into Canada. So like even to today, that's still a big part of the Canadian DNA, this British loyalism. So that took off over there. And then in 1901, Queen Victoria passed away. So the following year, there must have been a real sentiment of British loyalty after the passing of the monarch. So in 1902, the event started becoming international. That's when a few other people started getting involved, notably the 12th Earl of Meath, Reginald Brabazon. So he was a bigwig, and he started getting behind the project and pushing for it to become an international event, pushing to have it put into schools all over the empire. One of the things the Earl of Meath came up with was a set of 15 propositions that he hoped Empire Day celebrations would instill in the subjects of the empire. And I'll quickly run through those 15 propositions. One is love and fear God. Two, honor the king. Three, obey the laws. Four, prepare to advance the highest interests of the empire in peace and war. Five, cherish patriotism. Six, regard the rights of other nations. Seven, learn citizenship. Eight, follow duty. Nine, consider duties before rights. 10, acquire knowledge. 11, think broadly. 12, practice discipline. 13, subdue self. And 14, work for others. And finally, number 15, consider the poor and the suffering. I think that's a pretty good list of principles or propositions. Any comments on that? Would you think that that's a good values to be trying to instill into your people?
I think so. It's very Victorian, I think, very of its time.
Yes.
All 15 of those. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. All right. So this is the point where Australia starts becoming involved. Obviously, we federated in 1901. Prior to, during, and after federation, there was some criticism, some noise, some people that were saying we're moving too far away from the British, we're moving too far away from our roots. So this celebration of Empire Day was a way to placate or silence those critics to a certain extent. This is a theme that keeps coming up in this story. These bigger, powerful people become involved and they think this is a good idea and they push it. So New South Wales Premier at the time was Joseph Carruthers, and he thinks it's a great idea. So he goes along to the Premier's Conference in 1905. He tables it as a proposition. George Reid, the Prime Minister at the time, he supported it wholeheartedly, and then we were off to the races. It was happening. It was introduced into school curriculums all across the country and began being celebrated. So you might be asking, how was Empire Day celebrated? What did it look like? Well, it was kind of similar everywhere, but I'll give you some general Australian examples. The morning of school lessons would be about empire builders. A lot of schools would receive patriotic addresses from local figures, like your local mayor would come and speak to you, tell you about the value of the empire. There would be a ceremony. The children would go out on the oval, form a hollow square, raise a Union Jack and have a few songs, have some recitals, a couple of God Save the Kings and Britannia Rules the Waves. And then lessons would be finished for the day and all the kids would be off to the local showgrounds or the parade ground. And there'd be some sporting events like foot races, tug of war, and some picnicking. And then in the evening, all of the parents would arrive and there would be a big bonfire and some fireworks. And I've got a quote here. Now, there's an essay written on this, From Empire Day to Cracker Night by Stuart Firth and Jeanette Horne, and I'll be quoting from that. The acting director of education told Petersham children in 1911 was replete with brave and noble and self-sacrificing deeds, and every page of national progress is adorned with the achievements of famous heroes whose noble examples of patriotism and personal worth should be followed by the children. In the Empire Day version of history, Australian explorers and pioneers stood alongside Drake, Nelson, Wellington, and David Livingstone as heroes of the British nation. The Minister for Public Instruction pointed out to the pupils at Fort Street School in 1912 that British courage lay beneath national greatness, as Great Britain had shown in her successive defeats of Spain, Holland, and France. These great imperial principles now had to be practiced by Australian school children if they were to build strongly the section of the House of Empire entrusted to them. I'd say at the time, especially looking back now and knowing what happened in the First World War, which was coming up, decade or so after this, I would say that this program was a success in instilling this sense of patriotism and this sense of loyalty to the British Empire in these young people. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think that this thing took off so rapidly, probably within the space of 15 years or so, it really just showed that at the time, so many people in Australia and Canada, all over the world, really did view themselves as a branch of the British people, the British nation. And to have that solidarity, it's actually quite hard to imagine, to conceive it now in today's day and age. It has faded so significantly. But the zeal was real, to organize all of these activities and, the fervor was really there.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting now. We really struggle just with our own identity as Australians in modern Australia. It's difficult to imagine having this you know, globe-spanning identity that people seems to have very genuinely felt that they belongs to. All right, well, now, obviously, Empire Day is not still celebrated, so we're going to have to talk a little bit about why that is. And from the very beginning, there had been a lot of opposition to Empire Day everywhere that it was celebrated, but I'll talk more specifically about the Australian context for that. The trade unionists, they felt that the date of Empire Day was too close to May Day. So the 1st of May, the 24th of May, they thought, oh, it's only about 3 weeks apart. Like they're muscling in on our big day. So they didn't like it. Although the 24th of May was chosen because it was the birthday of Queen Victoria. So I think that may have just been a coincidence. The Australian Labor Party, they passed resolutions to abolish Empire Day at their national conference. In Catholic circles, there was a lot of opposition to it. In Catholic schools, there was a policy not to celebrate Empire Day. There was a lot of criticism, particularly around the jingoism, some of the more militaristic aspects of Empire Day, the calling on children to take oaths to fight, and a lot of the ceremonies were militaristic in nature, like marching in formation and such. I have one of the quotes. This is the Cleveland Street School in 1907, that all of the children would give the following oath with their hands on their heart, looking at the Union Jack. I give my mind to my country to think for it. I give my heart because I love it. I give my hands to my country to work for it. And then all of the boys were to add in unison to fight for it. So there is a pretty clear thread of the militaristic aspect of this running throughout it. Another quote from that essay that I mentioned earlier, at Mossman, Superior Public School on the Empire Day 1914, Chief Justice of the New South Wales captured the meaning of the celebration when he told the boys, who were apart from the girls, that he did not know that he had ever liked them so well as when he saw them standing straight and ready to fight for their country. So that's kind of a funny quote. He's telling all these young boys, like, oh, now that you're saying you're going to go and fight, you're all right by me.
I see. And so was this spirit, was this there originally when it originated in Canada?
Yes, I believe it began in Canada in response to the book.
I see.
To build support for that. I should have mentioned that. It's kind of intrinsic to it, and possibly it's just something that's intrinsic to empires, is this militaristic aspect. Yeah.
It was also the time that they were starting to mobilize colonial armies for the empire as well
in the late century. True. Yeah, so I just ran through a lot of the opponents. It was the Labor Party, the trade unionists, and the Catholics. And there was obviously, you know, a fair bit of overlap between those groups, and they were not happy with it. Even though there was all this opposition, I went looking and I was really trying to find some quotes from some prominent people that were denouncing or decrying, you know, whatever, saying bad things about Empire Day. I could not find anything that I thought was really, you know, relevant. So even though there was a lot of opposition to it, there wasn't politicians or public figures who were willing to come out and be quoted as saying, you know, no, this is wrong, this is bad, which is kind of interesting. So we've run through the opposition, and now we're nearing the end of Empire Day. So I should say, through the First World War, this tradition, this day of celebration, continued on going strong into the Second World War. After the Second World War, I think that's when it really started to fade. By the 1950s, the concept of the British Empire was becoming obsolete. Even within Britain, there was fairly strong opposition to the day. The UK Labour Party had passed resolutions to cease celebrating the day. And eventually, education departments just quietly removed the day from the curriculum. Now, because the day was so tied into young people and schools, bureaucrats were essentially able to just sort of decide we're not doing this and just quietly put it away. In Australia, the firecracker and bonfire aspect of the day, which was always something that happened in the evening, it now began to overshadow the original intention of the day, and that the day, it just turned into cracker night, and that's what it became. So long after Empire Day had stopped being celebrated and observed, there was cracker night into the 1980s, when all the people that losing fingers from firecrackers caused the end of cracker night. Also at this time, we've got the shifting demographics. The new Australians are coming into the country, the post-war migration. And obviously, they're not going to feel that it's appropriate for their children to be learning about the glory of the British Empire in schools. The focus for Australia was shifting to local and civic holidays. Things like Australia Day and Anzac Day were becoming more important, and Empire Day was fading into the background. It all came to a final end in 1958. The British Prime Minister at the time, Harold Macmillan, he stood up in the House of Commons and announced that Empire Day was over. So there was rebranding. Empire Day became Commonwealth Day, and the date was shifted. It was originally moved to the second Monday in June, and then later on to the second Monday in March. But how much have you heard about Commonwealth Day in recent years?
I have not heard of it. I've heard of the Commonwealth Games. And the Empire Games. I'm not sure if these are related to the days.
It's not something that's celebrated at all now. So that is pretty much the story of Empire Day. Now, there's the lady that I mentioned in the beginning, the Canadian lady, Clementina Trenholm. She has a whole book about it. So there's obviously more finer detail we could go into, but I think that's the broad strokes. So I guess the things that I wanted to discuss with you, Ben, were, do you think this day should come back? Do you think we've moved past it? What's your personal feeling on the topic?
I think it's interesting you mentioned about the critiques at the time, because I think that support for the Empire was fairly unanimous in Australia, even across the different sort of segments, even across people who are Irish. It was pretty unanimous. So I think it is interesting that there were groups like the trade unionists, as you say, who were dissenting, and the Catholic schools who were dissenting. And I wonder, perhaps was that to do, as you said, with its jingoistic spirit, and perhaps it implied a commitment to things like the Boer War, which people objected to at the time. And so I suppose it served its purpose, because Britain was the cultural, political sort of center of our world back then. It was how we understood our place in, you know, in Oceania, in the place we are so far away. And I still think that certainly holds to a degree. I'm not advocating that we would do away with that entirely. But I think the day itself of Empire Day, the conditions have changed so much that it just wouldn't make sense to revive it, in my opinion. You could have something that could commemorate or have that practice, that same solidarity between us and our British cousins, without necessarily reviving Empire Day.
Yeah, I actually have the exact same feeling as you. I feel like the day, it's as good a day as any to pick to reflect on our ties of kinship with our British cousins. But as far as the British Empire is not restarting. And one thing that I left out, one of the sort of catch cries or the logos, the mottos of Empire Day was "One King, One Flag, One Fleet." Mm. It's interesting that the fleet was included in that. And I think the military protection blanket that Australians perceived as being under the protection of the British fleet was something that inspired a lot of loyalty from Australians. Yes. And as we know, in the Second World War, when we made the call, hey, we need the fleet, it didn't come. Yep. which is which is probably a part of the shift away. It's one of many, many factors, but there has been this shift away from Australians viewing themselves as British into now viewing ourselves as Australians and as a related but separate entity.
Yes. It feels like it was it originated in the colonies, and it was almost like an appeal for that solidarity by the colonies so that they could ensure protection in the case of Canada from the US, in our case from our Pacific neighbours.
Yeah, that's a really great point. It did originate on the extremities of the empire. It originated in Canada, and it was obviously promoted by the Earl of Meath. So yeah. from the heart of the empire, it was, you know, seen as a good thing, and it was supported and promoted. But the fact that it initially started outside of Britain proper is, I think, a really good point. All right. Well, did you have anything else that you wanted to add on this one?
No. I was very interested to hear the sort of origin story of that. I didn't know it originated in Canada.
All right.
Interesting.
All right. Great. Well, I hope the listeners enjoy this one. As always, please like and share our content. If you want to get in contact with us, then go to oznatives.org. That's the best place to find all of our stuff. And thank you very much. We'll see you later.
I've been picked. For the great Empire Day, I've been picked. My arms were a-flinging and my heart was a-singing because I've been picked. My teacher knew I was a good reader, and I could dress up as the leader of the empire we had then, and I'd be draped in a red, white and blue flag and reign over all other lands, because that's what an empire meant then. The day came nearer, and I was getting excited. My teacher came up to me, and my day was blighted. She told me I was too small to reign. She wanted someone tall and striking, who looked like a Viking holding a shield and looking across the sea. And I was already weedy and felt rather seedy, and asked if I could go home because I was in pain. She said, I could do this part when I grow older. But how can I? Silly old cow. We ain't got no empire now.